Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go, God.
Letting go, God. Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter Five, and on the phone with us, as usual, we have the Wombat. Say hello, Wombat.
Wombat is here. Well, happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas and all that jazz. Hope you guys are having a great time, and wish you guys all the best since the last time we heard or talked to you guys.
So true, so true.
Doubter Five, how you been?
What was that last? I didn't hear that.
Doubter Five, how have you been?
Oh, I've been fine. Working hard. I'm off for Christmas, though. I don't have to go back to work for a while, so that's all good.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. Well, this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is December 20th, 2017, so if you're not listening to us on that date, you are listening to a repeat of the show or a podcast. This is a call-in talk radio show, I'll get the words out in a minute, about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville and East Tennessee or the Bible Belt, well, that's just not true. There are several atheist and free-thinking rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville and the area, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
No spoilers, please, no spoilers. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the movie yet. I will. I already saw the first Star Wars, well, the last one that came out. I like it. I've been trying to avoid Star Wars for, like, the last...
I don't
every,
think so.
This
is not Star Wars. No.
Start now. I will
we're not
it
talking.
Next week with my mom.
We're not even talking movies. We're talking about TV shows. There's an atheist call-in TV show that's been broadcasting here in Knoxville for over 7 years, and you didn't know it yet. Ha ha. And we'll be talking about how you can watch that later on in the show too, as well. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. Now, what do we want to talk about today, Wombat?
I want to talk about stubborn people.
Stubborn people?
I want to open up a conversation about a hobby that I have.
About stubbornness?
And that hobby...
hobby is stubbornness?
My hobby involves dealing with talking with people, random people that I meet all around the great city of Lexington, Kentucky that I live in right now. And it's actually kind of cool because I meet some incredible people. I meet some really interesting people. I have some really interesting thoughts. And I try to have a 5-minute conversation with them if I can. Most of the time it ends up being way longer than that. But really, when I go up to someone, I'm trying to find out what they believe and why they believe it. That's how I start most of the conversation.
Really?
And what we end up with is talking about a belief that means a lot to the person that I'm talking to. And in order to gauge how much that belief means to them or how confident they are that that belief is true, I get something called a confidence scale. And the confidence scale is basically this weird thing where I ask them, you know, say you, Doubter Five, believe that Pringles were the best potato chips, period. No other potato chip is better than a Pringles potato chip.
Uh-huh.
And I'd say, okay, Doubter Five, that's kind of weird. That's crazy. That's crazy stuff. Now, I respect you. I would respect you when I'd ask you. Well, that implies, how confident are you that that's true? From like a scale from 0 to 100?
Well, that type of thing is just simply an opinion. I mean, and nobody can judge it, that opinion, but you. It's a preference. Thinking. It's very, not objective, subjective.
I'm going to define the scale, and mm-hmm. the scale would be from 0 to 100, and I explicitly say that from 0 to 100, how much do you believe it's true? 100 being, no matter what, you're going to never change your mind. This is your position. Regardless of whatever happens in the future, you are 100% confident, zero doubt, that this belief is true. And then 0% would be, you know, something else.
Yeah.
And I often don't say that they have to pick 100 or 0, but you'd be surprised time after time after time after time. I'll get people who say they're 100% confident that their belief is true.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not about Pringles. Sometimes it's about ghosts. Or sometimes it's about they hear their ancestors speak to them. Or that they can hear an inner voice inside their heart to tell them what's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Or that a God exists. Or that they know that Jesus Christ is our Savior. And I'll hear these things with extreme confidence. And
yeah.
at that point, it becomes less of a subject of an opinion and more of something that we can actually test to see if it's true or not.
How do you test a subjective opinion, though?
So the subjectivity of the opinion is, I really, really like this thing, but if you say, I will not change my mind, I'm so confident in this that I'm not willing to change my mind regardless of anything. And then I ask them, you know, we have a conversation about it. And then ultimately find out that there is a thing that they will change their mind for on that belief. For example, if you really, really love Pringles and you say, I'm 100% confident that I love Pringles. Why do you say that real quick? We'll do a quick role play real quick. Tell me how much you love Pringles. It's from a scale from 0 to 100. 100 being you'll never change your mind. You are 100% confident, zeroed out. Is that
100%. I have 20,000 boxes of Pringles at the house, and I better not change my mind.
Okay, so now we have something. We have a statement that we can test, because now I can ask, okay, so cool. What is the thing that you, what got you to that 100%? And you might say things like, you know, well, I've tasted almost nearly every chip out there, and this is the best one. It's the one that my parents loved. It's what I love too. Therefore, it must be the best one. I have a book that tells me what the best potato chips are. And right here in the book, it says, number one, Pringles is the best chip. I got all this evidence here, and there's nothing else more that I can say about it. And I can say, okay, well, Trump, you got a good pile of evidence. Would you say that belief you have is then evidence-driven? And if you said something like yes, let's say, yeah, mm-hmm. you believe it's evidence-driven,
sure.
there's a chance that there might be evidence out there that could maybe sway your mind. I'm not saying that it's the case, but if we lived in a world where evidence shows that Pringles weren't the best potato chip, would you still believe that? And if you said something like, well, yeah, if the evidence said a different potato chip was the best, that maybe I would change my mind.
Yeah.
At that point, we've already come to a conclusion that maybe
it's 100% not.
Isn't yeah. the best
right.
or the most accurate explanation for what your position is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not evidence-based, then we can dig deeper and try to find out what is keeping you at that 100%. Oftentimes, it tends not to be evidence-based, but something based on faith. And what we have at the end of the conversation is an illumination of one of two things, if we have a good thought. One, that, you know, if you have an evidence-based position, you can never really be 100% on almost anything. And that's fine.
Because the evidence could change. Or you could find
right,
new evidence.
Because you could always learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
You have a rational position that's willing to open itself up to, you know, contradictory evidence that might arise in the future. You have that option available to you. But
right.
you can still be really, really confident in it. But if you have something else that's still keeping up at 100%, what is it? Maybe is it faith or is it stubbornness? Maybe,
mm-hmm. yeah. mm-hmm.
maybe there could be an underlying whether it's conscious or non-conscious. Yeah.
Or like you really love your life in the Catholic Church, or you really like your evenings with the child, the youth group that you've been spending time with. And even if you changed your mind, your stubbornness would keep you in there, just at least saying that you believe so that you could stay and be with the people you like, that type of thing.
Right. Right. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think really what it comes down to is a lot of people need to, how do I put it? It feels good to be right, you know? Wow. It really, really feels good to be right.
Yeah.
Man, I love being right about so many things. But being wrong, it's so much work ahead of me. That means, like, it's like someone just unmade my bed. It's like, oh, well, now I got to do all this work. Thanks very
mm-hmm.
much.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll make it better the next time, but still, it's still work I got to do now that I know that I'm wrong on something. It's an opportunity to do something better, but it's still work that's ahead of me. When I'm right, I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can convince myself that I'm right, even if I'm wrong, even if I might know that I'm wrong, then we have a completely different thing. Maybe something even more insidious to an extent than faith. We have basically a human ego coming into play, determining how willing you are to be open open basically to new evidence that could possibly change your mind and give you more truth in your life, more rational position.
Right.
And that's what I want to talk about today. The danger of stubbornness, not necessarily just faith or just ego, but like the quality of stubborn on both sides, both atheism and theists. And have you experienced that before? And how do you get over it? I think that would be a cool topic today.
Well, sure. How do you get over it?
Let's leave that for the second half. What about the first half? Have you ever talked to anybody that you've noted to be particularly stubborn, especially when it comes to changing their mind, even if they knew that their position may not necessarily be the right one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we all have.
Oh, give me an example.
I'm sorry?
Give me an example.
Oh. Well, the ones that popped into mind are all about religion, but I'm sure we can think of some that aren't.
Give me some of the ones for religion. This is a religious show, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, I had a guy at one of my jobs that, who would always come up to me and start a kind of a discussion about religion. He always came from the religious side, and I would always counter with the atheist side. And no matter what points I made, he would just stubbornly refuse to acknowledge them, much less believe them. Mm. And, it was not founded on any evidence, because I would put to the evidence that he was presenting and tell him how it's fallacy or how it's just a story in a book or something like that. And it wouldn't sway him at all.
Would say he's stubborn.
Sorry?
You have a very deliberate approach to it, I can tell. I have had similar conversations at work, though. I've probably one of the best examples that I've had was talking to one of the fellows that I have at my current job, and she was talking about how there were 7 days in creation. And I was doing something else at the time, but I decided to just, that the 7 days of creation always piques my interest, particularly in a science lab. So I asked her, didn't God rest in one of the 7 days? And she said, yes, that's in the book. So I said, what does that mean that there's only 6 days of creation? And this was a person who already had, the flyer pamphlet that had, the 7 days of creation in her hands at the time. She's like, well, no, it's 7 days. And I'm like, well, didn't he rest on a day? It's like, well, no, that's creation, too. He was creating rest. And I'm like, So he didn't rest at all? He was still doing stuff? He was still creating stuff? Did he rest at all? Like, no, yes, he was. He was creating rest, and that counts as one of the days of creation, but also counts the day when he rested, and I'm like, and a day that he wasn't creating anything because he was resting? And I was like, no, you don't get it because it's seven. And then at that point, she was just more willing to walk away.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting, and I went back to the thing that I was doing. But again, it's like a situation where, 6 and 7 don't equal each other.
Right.
It's quite clear as day. In the most, general sense of reading any context of that book.
That they would tell you that the Bible is inerrant and there's no contradictions in it, and that, it's one solid story and with no problems in it from beginning to end. But then you say, well, what about the people who came to the empty tomb? Who were the people that first came to the tomb, and what did they see? I said, all four Gospels tell you different things, you know, about different people who came to the tomb, that the angel talked to different people, told them different things. And they say, well, that's not a contradiction. You know, it's, you know, people tell different things. Like if you have an accident, you know, the witnesses will all say different things. But that's not what they said a minute ago. Before, they were saying it was a perfect book with no contradictions.
Right.
And, you know, and they would stubbornly refuse to accept your point in that. And that drives me crazy. It's just one of those stubbornness things.
Stubbornness is like the first obstacle to get over when it comes to trying to get people to have some rationality with regard to their beliefs. Because a lot of them don't want to change. They have that momentum already.
Right.
And they don't want to change course. And stubbornness is like the front bumper of their mental tracks. Or like the cow flippers in front of a train track. Just like bump it away, all good logic as far as they can see.
Mm-hmm.
There's another example. You know, you have the Bible has three different versions of Genesis in that same book.
And like
most,
Genesis 1 and 2, different stories.
Versions of the Bible that at least, you know, modern-day Christians use. And by Christians, I mean Protestants and divisions.
And there are two versions of the Ten Commandments, too.
Oh my gosh. There's more than just Ten Commandments. There's like 316, and some of them disagree with each other.
Quite a few.
There's over 300.
Yeah, but as far as the Ten Commandments that Moses went up on the mountain and got, he got one set, came down, broke them, went back up, and got another set of Ten Commandments, and they're not the same commandments. I mean, they have some overlap, but there are some that are different. Why would a perfect God give him two different sets?
And why would they supplement it with another 290-plus other commandments to make up for it?
Right.
Like, why'd you spend 40 years up there giving commandments? But that's even if you take the story as the truth. Let's consider the fact that if you're in a Catholic church, there's a whole other section to the Bible that are not in most Protestant texts called the Apocrypha Bibles, or Apocrypha books, texts.
Yeah.
And there are also Apocrypha that aren't even in the Catholic domain or in the Protestant domains, but are exclusionary to themselves. Like, there's books that were just excluded from what ultimately made the Bible at the Council of Geneva, and are still out there for most people to read that were at some time, you know, holy canon for a lot of people who would eventually make up the faith beliefs that we take for granted today as being made as one consistent thing that's never changed.
There was a book of Judas, a book of Mary. There were whenever somebody talks about what Gnostic Gospels, there are several of those that were in at least Christianity at one time, but they didn't make it into the canon, all because of a vote of a council back in Roman days.
And we've had previous shows where we had talked about, you know, the 7 days of the week, the 7 days of creation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have 7 days that are named after gods of other religions, and you can tell that point blank to, you know, a Christian. Hey, we have Thursday, Saturday is named after Saturn, which is another Greek god. We got
Wednesday is
Sunday,
named
after the sun. We used to worship the sun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they'll be like, whoa, no.
Yeah, why would God create 7 days and not name any of them after himself, but name them all after other gods?
What a great god, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, some part of it could just be, you know, honest, unknowingness about that, you know, like I like to call that ignorance, but there's a lot of baggage with that term. People don't seem to like being called ignorant, but it's okay to not know things. But when you do know it, and when the evidence is so obvious in front of you, and you still don't recognize it for what it is, there's a stubbornness there.
Yeah.
And I think it's dangerous because it's basically like driving with, you know, a painted black windshield. You know, you're you say, I know how to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about traffic in front of me. I know how to stop and drive. But you're not seeing in front of you. You're basically a person who is in that kind of mindset is operating under such a level of complacency that it's actually particularly dangerous, not just to them, but to how they may raise their future children, how they interact with other people.
Yeah.
They could even be a danger onto themselves. say, for example, like, you know, there are people who would stay away from a doctor and maybe even consult their pastor with regard to the health of themselves or even their children. Have you heard about these things?
Oh, yeah, or even fly a plane into a building, for that matter, or blow up themselves in order to kill non-believers. You know, it just goes on and on.
Or, you know, selectively genetically mutate themselves or their children based on some sort of pact that an old guy in a book gave once.
Uh-huh.
Like, there are people, you know, who will, like, gladly, you know, chop off the foreskin of their kids for no critically logical reason aside from, well, even my parents did it, or because the Bible said it's good to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still looked upon as if it's the norm. But there should be a recognition of, like, there's a recognition of, why are we doing this, and is it good to do that? And even if we realize that we don't have a good reason to do it, we should not be so stubborn to maintain that status quo. We should at least try to reinvent how we think about things and be willing to assess if we're doing things for the right reason or for even good reasons at all.
Right. And you get into this area where reality starts creeping into your mindset. Your blinders don't cover situations, and then you start thinking, well, I'm sinning because I'm doubting. No, it's reality is trying to rear its head and give you a clue that what you're believing isn't part of reality, and you need to change your beliefs. But a lot of people would just shutter down and keep their head down and keep plowing on in the face
of shuttering down concept, reaction that you mentioned. I've seen it before. I've seen people while I was still trying to get better at talking to people about what they believe and how they believe it, trying to, like, make sure that the conversation stays pleasant. I would notice that, you know, they might fold their arms. The body language would indicate, like, I'm getting through to them, but they don't like it. You know, like, they might take a step backwards, or they might fold their arms, or they might start looking in different directions, trying to, like, figure out a reason they should need to, like, go for some reason. While I'm just standing there, you know, pleasantly talking to them. The shutdown reaction is a clear indication that they're realizing that they're outside of a comfort zone, or they're crashing into a discomfort zone. And that's because, you know, the stubbornness that they have, the whatever they're using to support their beliefs that isn't properly well-founded, is a bubble.
Yeah.
And if that bubble interacts with anything, it's going to pop.
Yeah.
And they don't know what's going to be able to fall or what the fallout will be. Thankfully, you know, there are people out there who are willing to support you with regard to that. Like, for example, even when I came out of my faith, my mother was still in religious, my sister was still religious, most of my family was, but I still had a lot of outlets available to me through online, through community groups, through friends, who are all willing to hear me out, and I really greatly appreciate having that. I think the media group that you set up, the Facebook group that you guys set up, Society in Knoxville was the first atheist group that I had ever gone to, and it was such a valuable thing for me to have that.
I'm
because
so glad
once
to hear
I got
it.
Out of it, and I can tell you, it's so great because I started my work in Knoxville, and when I was in Atlanta, I was in the closet as an atheist the entire time, but I didn't really have an idea of, like, what it was. It wasn't until I got to Knoxville that I knew I was an atheist. I was 100%, and I wanted to meet other people who are like-minded.
Right.
And I thought when I went to go see you guys, it would just be like a debate festival.
Oh.
But no, it was just because I didn't know what you guys did.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you were as angry as I was. Because
no.
I have had a lot of questions.
Well, I'm sure every last one of them has gone through an angry phase. You know, there's a reason that that atheists are angry. How would you feel if you've been lied to your entire life and then discovered it? You go through an angry phase.
You don't accept it.
Yeah.
You don't accept it as, well, you know, maybe it's not a lie after all. Maybe it isn't true. You get over that stubbornness and realize that once you've tasted the truth, you can't really, like, untaste it anymore. Like, once you know you've been lied to, you can't continue that lie anymore. Once you see the magic trick for what it is, you can't be fooled again.
Right.
And as much as you may even want to stay religious, you can't. So, like I said, I was just really glad to have a community like yours. Wonderful people, and it's out there for anyone who's willing to look for it. That's the point I want to make.
Right. And even it's out there for people who are not atheists who want to come in and just talk to us and see that we're not, you know, evil baby killers, you know, that type of thing. Just see that we're just normal people. We just don't believe in God. I mean, we have morality and purpose and friendship to offer. We're a community just like any other community.
Right. We still have beliefs.
Right.
There's really the only difference is how we answer one question, which right. is, do you think there's a God or not?
The one thing we have in common. Everything else is up for grabs, I like to say.
So I will say this as just a quick little summary. Mm-hmm. Stubbornness tends to be a really dangerous thing with regard to how people can see the world around them. It can block out very useful information that they can use to make true perspectives or more true or mechanisms, useful mechanisms to come to true conclusions. We know that not every position is necessarily held on faith. Sometimes it could just be held by ego. And if you let go of that ego, if you let go of any like sense of stubbornness you might have,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't necessarily mean you have to change your mind that day. All it means is that you're now more open to changing your mind.
Yeah.
You're more willing to step away from that 100% absolute, I'll never change my mind no matter what happens
right.
in the future, to a maybe a 99.9% where it's, I'm very, very, very confident it's true, but I'm also willing to hear out
right.
new information.
And a lot of people,
maybe I'll let that influence on
yeah, a lot of religious people don't realize that just about every atheist, well, there are a lot of them that were raised in a secular household, but we all came from religion, and we didn't convert or deconvert to atheism like in a flash, like some Christians convert to Christianity. It takes us a long time of thought and study, and we go through several stages on our way out from believer to non-believer, and we generally reason our way out. It's not something that just comes to us as a intuition, as it was.
So that's correct. That's correct. And one last point, I'd say I'm still in a transition phase. And I think that's like a lifelong, you know, journey. Right
yeah.
now I'm going down a path where I'm trying to understand what's the best way to talk to people who do believe in God
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily try to get them to convert out of their faith, but really just to see if they're willing to examine their own beliefs. And then maybe together we can work on a better way to try to figure out true things.
Right.
Because I'm interested in just trying to figure out true things. And if God's true, I want to know about it. But
right.
I want to have a good
mm-hmm.
mechanism to get there.
Right.
And we can work on it together.
And that
more on that when we get back.
Right. That feeling that you have when reality isn't comporting with your beliefs is called cognitive dissonance. You might want to take a minute to Google that if you're listening. It's cognitive dissonance. And find out a little bit more about it. You may be experiencing it, and all you really know about it is that it makes you feel uncomfortable. But it's, as usual, knowledge helps. So check it out, see what's going on, and maybe you'll be able to feel a little better in the future. We're at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to take a station identification, play a song, and then we'll come back in about 5 minutes. This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville. You're listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
We must ask ourselves, we who are so proud of our accomplishments, what is our place in the cosmic perspective of life? The cosmic perspective.
The exploration of the cosmos is a voyage of self-discovery.
As long as there have been humans, we have searched for our place in the cosmos.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and alone, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be viewed. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
Doesn't the ancient myth-makers knew. We're children equally of the earth and the sky. In our tenure on this planet, we've accumulated dangerous evolutionary baggage. We've also acquired passion for others, love for our children, and a great, soaring, passionate intelligence, the clear tools for our continued survival.
We must ask ourselves, we were so proud of our accomplishments. What is our place in the cosmic perspective of life?
We could be in the middle of an intergalactic conversation, and we wouldn't even know.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp?
Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, planet, moon, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you.
Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
We've begun at last to wonder about our origins, star-stuff, contemplating the stars, tracing that long path. Our obligation to survive and flourish is owed not just to ourselves, but also to that cosmos, ancient and vast, from which we spring.
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, planet, moon, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
Think of how many stars, planets, and kinds of life there may be in this vast and awesome universe.
With every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is a Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We did give out the number a little earlier, but the phone isn't working as far as speakerphone goes. So if you call in, I'll have to pick up the phone and we won't hear you on the air. But apparently all it really needs is some batteries, and I'm going to try to get some of those for next time we do a show. Let's talk about the free thought groups that are here in Knoxville, and these are groups that you can join or at least visit and find out more about. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're now in our 15th year. ASK now has nearly 800 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org, or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. And if you don't live in Knoxville, you can still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. If you don't find one, start one. Also, you can join Ask in person at our weekly Meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near West Town Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. and they've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on Upcoming Events. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in God, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. However, they only meet once a month. It's on the fourth Sunday at the International Building down near the fairgrounds. There's also, since school is in session, the Secular Student Alliance has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement. Or maybe we'd just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we talked about the Knoxville Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum. That's put together by the Rationalists of East Tennessee and the Atheist Society of Knoxville, and you can see it every Tuesday, generally, between 5 and 6, Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at CTV Knox. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where I've found that a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the TV or the radio show, just come to an ASK meeting or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. One thing I'd like to say about the TV show is that we may be moving to a new time. Starting in January, I think it's going to be on Wednesday at 6:30 to 7:30, which would conflict with the radio show. So,
Yeah, that's the competition.
Yeah,
what's going on?
Yeah, everybody's going to have the, what is it, that choice that they say, Damien's choice or whatever. And they'll have to just listen to the radio show.
I wanted to call in the show and prank them and, yeah, and say, hey, I'm some crazy guy.
Yeah.
I got questions for you. What do you believe? And what do you believe?
Yeah. Yeah, we can call from the radio show, call the TV show. There we go.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I guess, well, one other thing, if you like this program and would like to listen to our pre-recorded shows or podcasts, as we call them now, you can always go to freethoughtradio.com. Doggone it, I'll come up with it in a minute. It's a new domain I just put online, freethoughtradio.com. And when you go there, it'll take you to our previously recorded podcasts or shows, and you'll be able to download them and listen to them at your leisure. And that's all for the announcements. Where do you want to take it now, Wombat?
Okay. We were talking about stubbornness. Stubbornness, the barrier towards a lot of people's willingness to be open about new information that could actually not only make them better people, have a better grip on reality, but improve everyone else's lives around them sometimes, most of the time. So we were talking about how sometimes when we were conversing with particularly religious people, they have a veil of stubbornness that keeps them from observing even really simple facts, simple contradictions, simple wrinkles about what they hold to be true, their infallible beliefs, if you will. But there are also atheists that need to be aware that stubbornness isn't just something that theists can have. There can be something on atheists as well, because I have met atheists who are on that opposite end of that 0 to 100% scale, where they are 0% confident that a God exists. That means 0%, as I have defined it to them in that conversation, 0%, you are absolutely positively sure that there's no God. Positive, no information will ever change your mind. You are 100% confident.
I have talked to atheists like that, and generally the answer I get is that, no, if I got some evidence that he would exist, it would be stupid not to believe in him. I mean, I may not worship him, depending on what kind of character the God has, but if we have evidence, why would we not believe it?
Exactly. And let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. That is a rational position to be in. Mm-hmm. That position, if they told me they're at 0%, but they also said that they're open to new information, I would say, well, do you think 0% is an accurate representation of what you really believe if you are open to changing your mind? Would a person that is not open to changing their mind and a person who says they're at, you know, a certain percentage and another person who says, I am open to changing their mind, are they at the same level of confidence or is one more absolute than the other? And it would seem that the person who's willing to change their mind doesn't necessarily have a dogmatic, absolutist point of view on things. They actually have a more rational, more lenient, more aware perspective, because if you have an evidence-based position, it necessarily means that you are willing to change your mind for more information. Let me tell you something. I am probably not pregnant right now. You know, I would say I'm very, very, very confident that I am pregnant right now, because 100%. I can tell you a whole list of things. No, because I can tell you my position is based on evidence. I know I'm a man. I know I have evidence that other men have not gotten pregnant. I know my medical records. I know my weight hasn't really increased that much. I know what I do for, you know, I know myself pretty well. And as all these things added up, I'm really, really confident, but not 100% that I am pregnant, because there could always be the case that, you know, I've been hallucinating that I've been a male the entire time. I may, in fact, be a female. I could be underneath some sort of, like, narcotic, that my current life right now is just some sort of weird hallucination. I am, in fact, a woman, and I could be pregnant in that case. So I as wild and crazy as that is, I'm still not going to hold myself to an absolute position, because I have a position that's based on evidence, and I need to be open to forthcoming evidence. Doesn't mean I'm confident that I'm pregnant. It just means that I'm confident that I'm willing to change my mind if enough evidence that meets my criteria or satisfies me otherwise presents itself. Yeah. Until then, I'm confident that I am not pregnant, but I'm not 100% confident or 0% confident.
Yeah.
I'm open to it.
There's a lot of times I'll be talking to a believer like that, and they'll ask me, you know, well, what kind of evidence would convince you? You know, if you say evidence would convince you that God is real, what kind of evidence would convince you? And it's really hard to come up with something, because, you know, whatever you say, it could end up just being either a hallucination, you know, something, a side effect from some medicine you're taking. It could be anything. But the thing about it is, an omniscient God would know what evidence would convince me. And the fact that he is not presenting me with that evidence is very telling. Why would he do that? He wants me to believe, doesn't he? I mean, my eternal soul depends on it. But he's still not giving me that evidence?
I think that's a great point. I also think that there are people out there that would say that they use faith. And I know we're bagging our Christians again, but let's hear me out real quick. There are a lot of people who say they use faith to get themselves to 100% marker. Again, even if you use faith as your evidence, which I don't necessarily value as a good, reliable means to get to the truth, but even if you have a mountain of faith that supports your claim, even that's not justifiable up to the 100% mark. And there are also people out there who say, on the contrast, atheists, well, scientific evidence proves that there's no God. I've heard that as well. Straight out of people.
Well, you have to specify which particular God and why the science proves that whatever that particular trait of that God you know, is wrong, doesn't work under scientific rules. I can understand that.
We'll say, like, any supernatural being. Let's just keep it in the general sense. Any supernatural being.
Right.
Science proves that there are people who claim that
I've just heard the opposite, that science has nothing to say about supernatural because we can only test the natural.
Exactly. And how do you even go around with a supernatural detector to figure out what is supernatural and what isn't? Like,
yeah.
And when you have that, then you can determine if it's real or not. Mm-hmm. But until we then are the scientific position on a God, that, and if we define God as a supernatural agent or being of some sort, is
yeah.
There's no means of determining anything about that.
Right.
So even when a Christian says that there's scientific evidence for their God, that is also a misnomer, because science can't prove that there's a God. Science can't disprove there's a God. And because we don't know through scientific means that there's a God or not, doesn't justify belief in a God either. It just means that the best answer on that question is, I don't know.
Right.
And typically when you don't know something, the best position is to withhold belief until you have enough evidence to come to a more reliable conclusion.
Yeah.
And if you do think you have enough evidence to come to a reliable conclusion, it doesn't justify it being at 100%. Unless if you have some amazing data that you need to tell the world. And if so, come and talk to me. I'm in Lexington, Kentucky.
Right.
I will ask you what you believe and why, and I might record it too, and I guarantee we'll have a pleasant conversation. Because mm-hmm. I'm getting really, really good at it.
Yeah, and if you don't happen to be in Louisville, Kentucky, you can always come to an Atheist Society meeting here in Knoxville. Have them every Tuesday night. Come in, plop down, and have a conversation. We guarantee good ones.
So we wanted to wrap up the conversation on how to get out of stubbornness, right?
Yes.
Because we've been talking about it on both sides. You know, there are Christians that could be stubborn. There are people of other faiths that can be stubborn too. Oh, yeah, I can tell you, man, I have good friends that are of many different faiths, from Wiccans all the way to Muslims. They can be really stubborn on what they believe, you know? Absolutely. Even mm-hmm. when they know that they don't necessarily have a straw to stand on, they will still hold true to what they believe.
Right.
Not so much on faith, mm-hmm. but just on the fact that, you know, they don't want to change their mind. They're right. comfortable doing it this way, and they'd rather wait it out.
It's one of the common stories that they have with the people that they love. The people they go to church with, the people in the community, the people they work with, and to give up that common story would throw up a barrier between them and that they wouldn't really want to live with. So they maintain the story. They maintain the fiction, even to the point where they don't believe it, they still maintain it. Like we talked on past shows about the clergy project. These are people who are still preaching from the pulpit, even though they're atheists. They are trapped in their position and feel like they cannot come out of the atheist closet and say how they actually believe, because they would lose their family, their job, and the love and respect of the people that they live with and work with.
Cool. I think the key distinction that we need to know, at least for this conversation tonight, is I'm not here to change anyone's mind. I don't think ideally, the only thing that I want to be changed is asking more questions and asking them honestly. But the ultimate goal isn't to change one person from being a Christian into an atheist, because, like I said, there's a chance that Christendom might be correct. And if it's true, I want to know it. And I think the best way I can do it is to have an honest dialogue and have, you know, some serious thought-provoking questions about why they came to those beliefs and whether or not they're reliable or not. But that's a topic for another time. Really, though, I'm not trying to change someone's mind with letting go of stubbornness. All I'm trying to do is let them be willing to be open to changing their mind.
Right.
And that's such a subtle but yet incredibly important position, because it gets them from that 100% to that 99%. And that 99%, totally justifiable to be at. It's 99.99999%. Perfectly justifiable. 100%?
Right.
Absolutely not. You need to correct that.
Right.
And at 0%, it's still absolute. It's still dogmatic. You're closed-minded. You don't want to change your mind. You're stubborn. At 0.0001%, okay, you're very, very confident, but you are also open to the possibility of learning some new things and possibly adjusting your position in the future.
True.
And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
And that's a small and significant step. And in that scope, it makes it a lot more possible for a lot of people to be more willing to get rid of their stubbornness, as long as they're willing to understand that it doesn't take much aside from a willingness to change your mind if presented with different evidence. And if you have an evidence-based position, that should be something that you would want to have.
Right, like a scientist.
And not
right. A scientist, you know, theoretically, when he holds a position, even if he's held it for 20 years and he gets new evidence, the old position is no longer valid, and he switches positions to the theory or the beliefs that the new evidence supports. And that's I think it's a good example for all of us.
Right. And I can't tell you how many times that it sucks sometimes to be wrong.
Yeah.
It does.
But at least when you find out you're wrong, you can revise your position and now you're right again.
Exactly. And that's how science works. Isn't that amazing?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, I use that all the time.
Now
talking.
We're right.
I use that all the time when I'm talking to my wife.
Also, there is the point of not having an answer. So what do you do when, I think the other issue with stubbornness is that, you know, being open to knowing that you're wrong, but also knowing that on the other side, there's no definitive answer. For example, like, what's going to happen to you after you die? You know, that's a big thing on a lot of people's minds sometimes, especially if they're religious. If they stay in their faith, they know. And it's nice and comforting to have that 100% belief that they know what's going to happen to them after they die. But if they're open to being wrong, what's left for them? To them, it's like a dark, dark void of unknowingness.
Right. Right.
And that's really overwhelming, especially if you've never spent a single second of your life considering that you could be wrong about what's going to happen to you after you die, because you know you're going to die.
Right.
What do you do in that kind of a mindset? That must be terrifying for a person like that.
Yeah, well, Mark Twain reached an epiphany on it. He says, I was dead for millions of years before I was born, and it didn't inconvenience me in the least. So he feels, you know, after I die, I will be dead again. And, you know, just a nothingness. There's no pain. There's no consciousness. You just cease to exist, just like blowing out a candle. The candle no longer exists. The energy dissipates.
There's nothing, a poem.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that most everybody in the world doesn't have any problem at all thinking that everything else in the world that's living will die and that's it. The only exception they have is when they die or people die. They have to have an exception for that. They just need to realize that it's a universal concept, or a universal ending, as far as we know. And the thing about it is, you shouldn't believe things without evidence, and we have no evidence that there's anything that continues about us after we die.
Mm. Also, there's kind of a virtue in knowing that even if you die and you know you're going to die, if you live a good life, if you can put out some good positive vibes, if you can make something constructive about that, the time that you've been here,
leave the world a better place.
Make the world a little better place before you leave. Put some good memories of people about you. Make a positive influence. Change some people's lives the best you can.
Write a book. Make a painting. Sing a song. You know.
Do you ever really die if people think about you fondly? You know, like, can anyone really say, like, it obviously biologically Elvis Presley is dead, but there are still people that celebrate his birthday, listen to his music, appreciate him as a human being, go to his home in Graceland and play his favorite songs.
Sure.
Like, there are people who still learn his music, and I think I couldn't imagine a more wonderful thing than have people, like, try to understand you on that level.
Mm-hmm.
Aspire to be something good like that. Aspire to prove some good in the world. If you go to a park and you see, like, a bench that's, like, dedicated to someone, take a moment to read it and just say, hey, man, thanks for making this park a little bit better.
Right.
Like, there's so much good things that you can do in your life that you shouldn't have to worry about what's going to happen to you after you die. We'll all be dead, but we all have this one opportunity to make this world a better place. Let's take that and make it happen. And, you know, and when we do pass away, living on the memories of the people who love us, who respect us, who try to understand us better, that's probably more than we could ever have even in this life right now. I think that's a beautiful way to live on in the minds and hearts of other people rather than try to pretend like we're not dying at all. It's a much more honest point of view. And it can happen where, you know, you do feel scared, but if that goes away as you accept it. I think there's a quick little poem that I learned. It says, when I was a child, I was afraid of death. When I was a man, I was ready for it. And when I was dying, I realized I never lived. But now that I'm dead, I'm over it.
I hadn't heard that before. That's pretty cute.
Yeah, I wrote that. I'm a writer.
Oh, really? That's good.
Poem.
You would be over it, wouldn't you?
A little poem makes the world a little bit better. Like, just things like that. Some levity. It makes the world fun. Learn some jokes. Get them out there.
Sure.
And I think if we all do this, we can make the world a better place. To the point where, you know, we can live on. And just not in the same way as we had before, but it'll be in a really interesting way that I think a lot of people can get a kick out of.
Uh-huh. That's true.
Living forever is boring. So do it in different ways. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And leave the best behind you. You know, like I say, create something or improve conditions for those that follow. make your neighborhood a bit more safer place. Just there's so many things that you can do. A lot of people say that atheists don't have any purpose in life. We have multiple purposes in life. The only difference is we make our own purposes. Instead of having some church give us our purpose, it serves their purpose. So make your purpose. I can't hardly think of anything that's more important than coming up with a good purpose for your own life. And don't be afraid to change them if you find a new, better purpose. Go for it.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, as I said for the theme of the show, we could be wrong about everything.
Yeah.
Everything we just brought up. Uh-huh. We could be wrong. But listen to us. We can still be really confident that it's true. And we can be willing to change our mind based on new information. And I think I'm also willing to change my mind on new information. I'm willing to admit that this could all be a forelark. But I would like to see the evidence. I'd like to consider it. And I'm open to it if
right.
it's presented to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the distinction that I'm trying to get everybody to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you have that, you're no longer at an absolute position.
Yeah.
You're not at that 0%. You're not at that 100%.
Yeah. And you got to realize that anecdotal stories are not evidence. And, the Bible basically is a collection of anecdotal stories that have miracles mixed into them, so that's even harder to believe that it actually happened.
It's not good evidence. And like I said, you can believe in God for reasons, but why would you want to believe for bad reasons? You want to believe for good reasons, don't
you? And if your reason is faith, you got to realize that every religion in the world, their preachers tell the people to have faith that what they're telling them is true. They can't all be true, but they can't all be wrong.
Right.
Faith is just not a good path to learning or epistemology. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We got 4 minutes, but for example, think about it with scientists. There'll be people who debate in science. There'll be people who say this is a real thing or this is not a real thing. But just because there's a disagreement doesn't mean that it's a neutral case that you can just pick or choose. Science is going to have disagreements and arguments no matter what.
Well, that's how you make progress.
Backs it up. That's how you put in progress, but it's not two people arguing that makes up the scientific case. It's the evidence that makes up the scientific case.
Right.
So even if one side's arguing and has no evidence, backing them up, the evidence still supports one side more so than the other. And that's the crux of what science discourse is. It's not just two people arguing with diplomas. It's who has the evidence supporting them the best and the most.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to faith, it's not just two people can have faith in two different churches, and they're both praying different gods. And we're saying, because they're both praying in different places, they can't both be correct.
Right.
But when two scientists are arguing, one side can totally be correct because the evidence is supporting one side, even if they're having a scientific
or if they disagree on the interpretation of it, which is a problem sometimes.
Yeah, the evidence might support strongly one interpretation, and that's one of the best things about science is you do get answers that are in fact true or close to the truth or accurate based on certain models. And
worthy of belief, anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, last word?
Last word. So don't be stubborn. Be willing to change your position. If you're 100% on anything right now, think about why you're 100%. And if you don't have a really good reason for it, be willing to change your mind. If it's on evidence, it can't be 100% because you are open to new evidence, aren't you? And if you are at 100%, even after everything we said, you need to get on the phone and call the president. You need to get a Nobel Prize.
You need to share
this information in the world.
Uh-huh.
Knock on people's doors and figure this out. And I want to know why. So don't feel afraid. We have a number here. Call us and get in contact with us through our many different links. What kind of links you got, Data 5?
Well, I gave out the wrong domain earlier. It wasn't just Free Thought Radio. It was freethoughtradiohour.com. So if you want to listen to previous shows, it's freethoughtradiohour.com, and you can download and listen to a podcast. Also, do a Google search in cognitive dissonance and find out a little bit more about that. You'd be surprised by how it works. And my last word, as usual, is everybody is going to some other religion's hell. Don't sweat it until they prove that souls are real, heaven and hell are real, etc. So hang in there, believe what's worthy of believing, and don't just fall for any old cock and bull story that somebody would hand you. especially when they're based on miracles. Okay, that's about it. We'll see you next week at 7 o'clock. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and this is Doubter 5, Larry Rhodes, saying bye. Say bye, Wombat.
Bye.
We'll see you, Wombat. We'll see you next week.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.